John, tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't. That's not how tag works, the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay, yeah. My bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But, yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and it burns. It is burning still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million
it's
times.
It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of Knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans, take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Sean Johnson and Andrew East.
Okay, folks, this is...
Oh my gosh, we're rolling.
We're rolling. Are you nervous?
We're not prepared.
No, we're never prepared, John. That's the Dadville thing.
It's Andrew.
We just careen Andrew into the future with no regard for preparation. So today, as you said, this is our second time having a couple on.
Wow.
But this is the first time having a couple on. I would
it's
say
as strong as you guys.
It's as athletically astute. With the other, I feel like that was like an Enneagram thing.
Yeah.
So it was a focused.
Mm.
Yeah. This is we're really getting in there.
We're
couple
speaking
time.
To a couple. The first one was we weren't focusing on them as a couple.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a big day. And so with us today, this is big. This is big. This is has Dadville been leading to this the whole time?
Yeah, we're at the mountaintop right now. I feel like, Dave, you and I should enjoy it because it's just careening down.
Okay, we have Andrew East and then Sean Johnston East.
Yes,
I feel like there was too many T's in there. I think
there was one too many. But yeah, I'll take it.
To hit the East, but then second. It jumped earlier.
Yeah.
So we do kind of like the brag sheets. So we're going to give like the quick about you guys.
Dave and I talked about this before.
Yeah.
We need to like make this quick
because
we could spend 25 minutes.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
24 on Sean about
okay exactly that's what I said.
What is he doing?
He does it all the time.
Look at his face. We could just talk about that for a while.
I know, it's beautiful.
Okay, Andrew, former American football. I like they said American football.
Yeah.
That's great because listen, we have our presence in Europe is pretty substantial. Just to clarify, American football long snapper, played college football at Vandy. Also has had multiple stints with various NFL teams, most recently the Redskins, which is now the Commanders.
Wow. Glad we fixed that.
Dude, this is really amazing. Competed on season 13 to 14 of American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, it was
the best 15
it.
Seconds of my life, man.
Dude,
I saw
how did that.
I saw the thing where you were like, I don't know how you describe it. This is great podcasting, right? Yeah, you're I'm doing a motion that no one can see. You know what I mean? Where you were like jumping from like pull-up bar to pull-up bar or something like that.
Yeah, it's yeah. The
no, ladder.
Not the salmon ladder. Not the salmon ladder. Imagine a pull-up bar on wheels and you go down a track.
Oh, yeah.
No, not the crank.
Not the crank.
No, it was like...
Let's reschedule.
Could I get...
You know what?
I feel like I've just come down with something.
I feel like there was a stint where my kids were obsessed with American Ninja Warrior. And then, and you watch it. I feel this way about all sports. You watch it and there's a part of me, like my dumb guy brain, that's like, I mean, I probably wouldn't be like as fast as that guy, but I could do that.
Yeah, I could do that.
And then we go, anytime we go to one of those trampoline places and you go to the back and they have some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
just start to do one of them and it's awful. I can't do any of it.
So did you train for it?
They gave me my first time, like 7 weeks heads up.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, John, where I felt pretty confident. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm going to crush this.
You just jump from one pull-up bar to the next. And it's on wheels.
Exactly.
You're suspended from the air.
Well, you don't know what you're getting into is a huge caveat that I realize. Oh, so you can train, but until you show up on the starting line, you don't know what your obstacles are.
Okay.
There's like categories, so it's like a balance. Mm. Usually it's like a hanging thing.
Which is kind of like parenting.
Exactly.
You know what? And let's pray real quick.
But my kind of MO in life is coming in way overconfident and then underperforming. It's pretty much how it goes.
You know, my dad says that the Barnes family motto is, we may not know what we're doing, but we're sure about it.
It's so good. Anyway,
and wait, he's on season 15.
I just did. I think it might be the last season of American Ninja.
Oh, you didn't know?
Oh, really?
But one good test for those listening, including you two, just go try to do monkey bars. I don't know when the last time you did monkey bars was.
Yep. Nope.
I mean, when I was thinking how good I am at monkey bars, I was thinking about my 8-year-old self. But then you go and you're like, this is not how
And you know what's humbling?
Sure, it's been a few years,
like a
but
bag
I mean,
of potatoes, man.
Well, what's so humbling too is when my boys, this is probably like 3 years ago. So, you know, like 8 or 9, my oldest was 8 or 9, and we were watching just copious, this was like COVID, like copious amounts of American Ninja Warrior. And so we would go to playgrounds, and of course the boys are like, and so, I mean, there's nothing more parenting, and especially dadding to me than this moment. The boys look at me, and they're trying to do the monkey bars, and they can't. And so, of course, they go, well, Dad, and I'm like, move over. And we went down to Centennial. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting up and doing the first two, and I thought, I've torn both
100%
of my, what do you call them, like, you know, your show. And I remember the boys staring at me, like, they're both, this is the moment. They're like, go, Dad. And I'm like, yeah. And like, tears are starting to well up. And I remember dropping down, and at that moment, the disappointment and them realizing, like, this is our dad. Like, this is the one guy that we're stuck with.
And the dropping down is the worst part because your ankles are on fire.
On fire. Mm-hmm. On fire.
Which I don't remember that as a kid.
I mean, that, yeah. So, but you did it again. You've done a third one.
I just did it again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where do they film that?
It's been all over Seattle, San Antonio, and then LA. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but if you turn it on, don't blink. Otherwise, you might miss my run. I mean, it all goes so quickly.
You didn't go down in the first little jumpy guys, did you?
No, not the first.
Like the little water, the little alternate. You know how they always start with the boom, boom, boom.
No, you got past that this time.
Yeah, you're watching some throwback seasons.
They've
upgraded the first obstacle because everyone just crushed that one.
Oh, do they do? Now they do the pegs.
This season was brutal.
And then they just changed it again. So, yeah. You got to be ready. You got to stay ready. Let's move on.
Stay ready. Okay. Moving on. We'll grieve that with you.
Again, we're going to go quickly through this fraction.
This is why John and I lectured each other. We were like, this is going to be... Okay. So, Sean Johnson, it doesn't have a T if you're wondering, East. American former artistic gymnast.
Yes.
Is that a thing?
It is. So, there's actually like 6 different gymnastics disciplines.
No.
Right.
Way.
Yeah. No, but tell Dave.
Okay. Yeah.
Tell Dave, but look at me when you tell it.
Yeah.
There's artistic, which is kind of the gymnastics that everybody knows. So mm-hmm. where you're tumbling and flipping you have the floor and bars, whatever. Then there's rhythmic gymnastics, which is like super flexible ballerinas who have ribbons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They have like
they have
the ball
balls,
sometimes.
Clubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
yeah,
throw
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
There's like stunting. I don't know. Acrobatic gymnastics. where it's like, I think like cheerleading almost.
Yes.
But it's just like the stunting, the throwing, okay. whatever. Okay. There's TNT, which is trampoline and tumbling.
Oh, wow.
So like a big tumble strip and a trampoline.
Yep.
I think that's
but,
it.
But the Four. Traditional the traditional ones that everybody would know. Would
it's
be
called
artistic.
Okay. Gymnastics.
Didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
2008 Olympic balance
good
beam
prep, guys.
Gold medalist team all around and 4 exercise silver medalists. It's ridiculous. Johnson is also the 2007 all-time world champion and a 5-time Pan American Games gold medalist, winning the team titles in 2007 and 11, as well as titles in the all-around, uneven bars, and balance beam. She was the recipient of the Longines.
Yeah, how do you say that?
Longines.
It's French.
Again, that's what I said.
It is French.
Longines prize for elegance and an ESPY award for best U.S. female Olympian in 2009. Oh, we're out of that. We're moving to indifference. 2009 winner of Dancing with the Stars season 8. That's so amazing. Mm-hmm. And in November 2012 earned second place All-Star Edition. Also, this is just a fun fact, and we call this an asterisk.
Okay.
First person with a gold medal to be on Devil. Do we need to fact check that?
We do.
Right now.
But it's definitely true.
And also together host Couple Things podcast, which is so great. And do y'all, is the Family Made Media, is that y'all's thing or is that a partnership with other?
That's our thing.
So it's so good, guys.
Thank
like,
you.
It's,
thank you.
It's, I've been following it for a while and didn't even know that was y'all's thing. I just love the content so much. And then I started thinking like, oh, they're on here a lot. sort of like, but I showed John and we were laughing at the... I put it in my stories on Instagram with the clip y'all do of talking to your son, putting him to bed. And you're like, okay, bed, night, night. And then
oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. The guy in the chair, yeah. I was,
so
that
good.
Killed me.
And I mean, you, like, yeah. For those listening who have seen that video and think that, like, it's not exaggerated.
No.
It's pretty much spot on.
No.
It is, yeah. And then also, I love the one, are you mad at me?
yeah.
But it's so good. I mean, just to encourage y'all, I feel like John and I were talking about as we were thinking about having y'all on, I think I just love how helpful it is, and it's so vulnerable, and it's like such a real, I just feel like y'all are doing such a good job curating content, and that's encouraging, but also just it's honest, and it's not like there's just so much stuff, and God bless all of it because it is helpful, but you know, that's polished, and now here's, you know, what do you do when your child does this and this, but and that's great, and God bless all of it, and it is helpful, but I just so appreciate that y'all are able to also be like, this is hard. Like, it's just really hard. Like,
it is.
You know, it's not an easy thing to do.
Parenting is hard for you?
Not for me. I speak plurally because...
Okay, so we're done with the brag sheet in just shy of 45 minutes. So I'm proud of both of
we're
us.
We're doing great.
So this first section, you'll have to forgive us. This, I have it labeled annoying sports questions. It's just, you
love
guys...
Love it.
You know that this is going to happen. We just got to get through it. We're here to talk about parenting. This is Dadville. We're going to get there. But first, we have some questions.
Okay.
We got to ask you.
Can
okay,
I? Do you mind if I pause and just interject here? Dave, this is our first time meeting.
Yeah.
John McLaughlin has been a household name for me since I was like 10.
We've talked about this.
Babe.
You cannot go on shows
I'm just saying,
no,
please do. It's an honor.
Please accept praise.
So Dave, that can is, you turn his mic
it's
up?
An, please, it sure really, really I grew it. Up in Indianapolis, not far from
oh, I didn't
where
know
John
that.
Grew
Your
up.
Name
and so it was always like, John McLaughlin
oh,
is out here crushing.
He's the man.
So.
That is so kind.
And then he also has a sense of humor, too. So who knew?
And look at that face.
Yeah.
It could,
now we'll never be invited back.
We were supposed to get coffees.
No, actually, if you praise us, you come back infinitely. You have an invite. There's okay. no...
It makes the interview go longer. The longer you praise us. That's very nice. It's very kind. So you guys are professional athletes, obviously. And you have known, I assume, many other professional athletes, right? And you've known many other non-professional athletes, or normies, as we call
yeah,
us.
Normals. Yeah.
Normals.
Mm-hmm.
Normies. Is there any common personality trait that you see with the professionals and with the normies? Well, or just with the professionals? Like, is there some common, like, obsessive gene, or what's the common thread that you see?
Wait, between non-athletes and athletes?
Mm-hmm. That's a kinder way to put it, but sure.
Okay.
Normies and pros.
Oh, you're saying, I think,
Let me ask it in a more confusing way.
Like,
no, is there a common thread
with the way that
the
they function,
okay. yes.
headspace,
gotcha.
Mindsets, etc.?
I would say with professional athletes, there is a common thread of like obsessiveness, like you
really?
Said. With every, like there's always one aspect of their life where it's like, this is where you've moved it to.
Yeah. Or like post professional career.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was actually going to be one of my questions. Like post, where do you feel like you guys have focused all
well,
that
hold on, intensive? Hold on. That's great. But you just make a great, I don't want to skip over this. Do you think that is native? So when you guys were 5 and 6, and obviously for you, because you're starting around there, honestly.
Yeah. 3. But you know, right? You started at 3.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
But not in any context of like training.
Right. But
I did like a Mommy and Me class at 3 years old. That was it.
But I mean, for both of y'all, like, was there something even that young that your parents would say, like, man, so with the other siblings, they love these things, but man, with each of y'all, they were like, there is this crazy focus and or determination, or like you said, sort of, you know, was that then too, or do you think that was developed?
I think it was developed.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I loved gymnastics, and I was lucky to have parents who helped like foster that in a very like natural way to myself. But I did so many other sports and
oh wow, okay.
I was just very driven in gymnastics. But I don't think like at 3 years old people were like, wow.
Yeah, okay. Or no, you had some like just pit bull determination even at that age.
Yeah, like I wasn't winning competitions when I started them. And
gotcha. Okay.
I just loved it so much. Loved it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And were you playing, like what were your first sports?
So my family, my dad played college football at Purdue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then he started doing Ironman triathlons.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's me who can't do 3 monkey bars and your dad who's like.
His dad was the most impressive human being.
Yeah.
He'd be like, we're going to go do an Ironman today.
That was our kind of rite of passage as boys. We would wake up anytime during our 13th year.
13.
Yeah, we were 13. And he'd say, we're running a half marathon today. And you'd be like, all right, we're doing it.
And you would go out and do it.
Yeah. A lot of, like mine was a mini marathon. So I don't know if you ever did that, but, so my oldest brother was a professional cyclist. He kind of followed in the Ironman footsteps. My second oldest brother played college football at Wheaton College.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was a really good, really good athlete. I was always kind of like the,
no, you weren't.
The third brother. I was never the standout in my family. So
that's not true.
But I think the common thread is, one, there are different, there's like a range of athletes in the NFL locker room. I'm sure it's the same with gymnastics.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you have professionals, and then you have people that are in the pros. And I feel like I was one of those guys that was in the pros, and I was not a professional. You know, with the habits, with my mindset, with how I approached it.
Wow.
Tom Brady is a professional. Wow. Everything he does is centered around being the best quarterback he can be. And that's like, you know, we've interviewed CrossFitters and like they'll not assemble anything or pick anything up outside of weights because they don't want to hurt them. And that's like being a professional.
Yeah. Wow. That's well said.
I was just a guy who was, you know,
but I also think it takes a different mindset to get there. You couldn't have just been Joe Schmo.
Yeah. You found yourself in the NFL.
Yeah.
You were very determined.
John.
Dave.
Yes, we're both right. What is the thing that I am the most known for? Like, that people know me the most for? What is that?
That's a good question. Okay. I mean, we've been friends for a long time. I think that's pretty obvious by now. You're kind of a premium meats guy, you know? You got to have premium meat, and it better be at a reasonable price, you know, if not a great price.
Yes, listen. And
I would say that's my answer.
Okay, no, people I'm going to take that. You're right. Yeah. I want to affirm that. And as I've searched far and wide for the best deal in premium meat, I've arrived at one place, John. I'm going to let you guess where that place is.
I know exactly where it is.
Say it.
Butcher Box.
That's it.
I'll say it again.
Okay.
Butcher Box. And I'll say it a third time for no reason. Butcher Box.
Listen, last night I was making grilled paprika drumsticks from Butcher Box stuff as they marinated in a tangy sherry vinegar. And I'm getting hungry. And paprika mixture next to some fresh asparagus. It may be asparagi if it's more than one. Fresh asparagus on the side.
That's right.
And I looked around my backyard, smelled that sweet yet smoky chicken rising from just above the bright flames of my grill. I thought, is Butcher Box the greatest thing that's ever happened to me? I had that thought. It's a real thought.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't doubt that it is. You know, after all, Butcher Box is 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood.
Yeah.
Right? Those drumsticks can change your life, Dave.
I once said that about Dave Grohl and Nirvana, too. And it's delivered free right to your doorstep, and box plans are customizable in both size and frequency.
Yeah, and also, let me add to that, a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. You won't be able... I mean, you'll be shocked at the value.
Yeah, you'll be but potentially offended. Potentially offended.
You might be offended. That's why. That's the only reason why someone's not subscribing yet. They're offended. They got to get over it. Plus, exclusive member deals, recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. Now, Dave, it's time to tell them about our special deal.
I was going to anyway, but since you said that.
But I Butcher wanted Box, to tell you.
Yeah, no, you love bossing me around. Butcher Box is giving us a special deal. Okay. Everybody lean in. Lean in right now.
I'm leaning
in. Sign up today using code DADVILLE to receive ground beef for life. We call it the GBL, plus $20 off your first order.
Folks, you think you didn't hear that right, but you did. That's 2 pounds of ground beef free in every box for the lifetime of your membership, plus $20 off your first order when you sign up at butcherbox.com/DADVILLE and use the code DADVILLE.
That's right. Get your meat box on.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, John.
Can I tell you something that I just have to get off my chest?
Feels like here's maybe an interesting place.
I'm just going to say it. Knock Around is the original affordable sunglass company offering quality shades that won't break the bank.
That could have gone a lot of ways, John. It could have gone a lot of ways. I'm glad it went that way, okay? And let me affirm you. You are right. Knock Around sunglasses are available in 17 different frame styles.
That's amazing.
17, John.
That's two more than different.
Yeah, they stopped counting with the different color combinations because I'm just going to say a ton. Just a ton of different color combinations. And are offered with both standard UV 400 protection and polarized lenses.
Well, Dave, don't forget, Knock Around also has kid-sized sunnies for the little ones. And they are always releasing new sunglasses, so check out knockaround.com for the latest releases.
I'm just going to add one quick thing. If you have a small face like my sweet wife does, and he has a child-sized face, that also works for
and
those,
childlike
okay?
wonder.
It does. Don't get me started on our hands. John, I'm on knockaround.com, and I found their limited editions. You laughing got me. When I saw you laugh in the corner, I was like, I'm not going to get into this. Okay, Jason, I love you. I'm sorry you had to edit. Here we go. John, I'm right now, I'm on knockaround.com, and I found their limited edition special releases, and these things are amazing. Each release is 100% unique, perfect for anyone who thinks of their sunglasses not as a necessity, but as a conversation starter.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, listen, here's the start of a conversation.
Okay,
speaking of conversation starters.
Yeah, let's do it.
Which limited edition pair are you going to buy and why?
Oh, man. Okay.
We're going deep here.
I thought about the rainbow trout because fish fear me. They all fear me. They see me, they swim away. And the headbangers are pretty cool, too. But since I was the king of every high school dance and wedding reception I've ever attended, and I went to a lot that I wasn't even invited to, John. It was just a moth to flame, okay?
Sure.
I'm going with the electric slide fast lanes. That's right, the electric slide fast lanes.
Hey, I knew you would land there. Okay. Put me down for a pair.
Okay.
But only if you can give me a special DADVILLE discount.
Hey, listen, Johnny Boo Boo, I got you covered, okay? You can use promo code DADVILLE15 every day for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. And for extra savings, because some of y'all care about that, okay?
Yeah.
Check out Knockaround's big annual Black Friday / Cyber Monday sale where you can get off 30% of your order.
That's
30%
insane.
Off your order on knockaround.com from November 23rd through November 28th.
That's DADVILLE15 anytime and 30% off from November 23rd through November 28th at knockaround.com.
Dave. John, we all love summer, and our kids especially love summer, but we lose that consistent schedule of when kids are in school.
And that can create some summer childcare problems.
You know what? Thankfully, though, Dave, there's a solution.
What?
Windy. That's W-Y-N-D-Y. Listen, it's an app that connects families to college student nannies literally in minutes. These nannies are background checked, interviewed, and honestly, just awesome, Dave.
That's right, John. And Windy has been around for 7 years and has been used by over 20,000 families. There are hundreds of qualified college student nannies on Windy near you working full or part-time.
All you have to do is go to windy.com/dadville to start searching for a nanny. And as a special offer, they're going to knock off $50 off your search if you go through that link. Windy provides top-notch service, but at a fraction of the cost of traditional nanny agencies and no ongoing fees.
Okay, so here's how it works. Go to windy.com/dadville to start your search. A Windy concierge will find great matches for your job and set up interviews for you. You can choose the one you like.
Get started now, because there are a lot of parents out there looking for nannies for the summer.
That's right.
Go to wyndy.com/dadville.
But inside, it makes sense what you're saying, but inside of that, there's a different, like, I love that you said that once you're in the locker room, so you're there.
Yeah.
Everybody in there is obviously really good at what they do, but even in that, you can tell the guys, that's such a great way to put that, like, everything they're doing, everything from food to sleep to, like you said, lifting to whatever that is solely focused on that thing.
Yeah.
That's a great qualifier. That's like very clarifying my brain. Because I think even in music, there's sort of the same version. It's
I was actually going to say, I feel living in this town, being a musician, I feel similar to what you're describing, how you felt in the locker room. I'm like, I so often feel like I'm just happy to be here, to be like in any kind of conversation. I have friends who are objectively, exponentially more successful than me. Mm. And sometimes I feel like I can enjoy it more because I don't have the obsessiveness.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just happy. I've already won. I'm like, there was a part of you, you know, this person that I'm thinking of, like, you were like, no, I'm definitely going to be there. And then I'm going to crush it. I'm going to keep going. And I'm like, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you were able to enjoy it more because of this mindset that you're describing?
I was a train wreck because I went from college football, which I enjoyed so much, to NFL, where I was like, "Wow, it's like a vacuum of joy here." It felt Whereas like the my joy kind of showed itself through hanging with cutting it up in the locker
room.
It's just different dynamic in the pros. So then that really shook my whole perspective of football. And then by the end of it, I was like, "Man, I'm just happy to be here." And I think, I've thought about this. I probably could have been better at football, but I didn't have that obsessiveness, nor did I really want it. And I'm glad for like the more well-rounded lifestyle I was able to lead, because there's a cost to everything. So cost of being a 15-year NFL vet comes at not being around your families much, traveling more, having this obsessiveness, but
not having knees.
It does. I mean, when you hear people say this, it does make sense to me, but that killer gene, it's like that, which is just that obsession. It's
I had it.
You still have it.
Can I tell y'all something?
You have to have it, right?
Well, I do. I feel like it means a lot that you
said
that.
Everything they're saying, I'm like, this is Dave Barnes.
Can I tell y'all something that I thought was so interesting? And I wonder if y'all can relate to this. This moved me so deeply. So I love soccer. I'm going to make this quick. I love soccer. I was listening to a podcast with these guys. It's a really great podcast. All these guys who are kind of English Premier League legends, and they host it together. It's really fun because they have such great perspectives on things. They had Thierry Henry, who's probably, he played at Arsenal, which is the club I love, but one of the most successful soccer players of all time. But he's very emotionally articulate. Like, he's done a lot of work, and he talks about this. But he said something that moved me so much, because he's like, you know, when I was at Arsenal, I was this killer. He's like, every game I went out, it was like Michael Jordan. That thing. He's like, and that was his idol. He's like, it was no mercy. I was there to kill. I wasn't there to make friends. I wanted everybody to be beat by us, right? But he went away to Barcelona. Arsenal has him come back on a loan spell, and he's at the end of his career. And he said this, and I thought it was so profound. He said, when I came back to Arsenal, I was just in a different place mentally. Like, I knew the best days were behind me. So he scored this game, and the crowd went crazy because you got this legend who came back. He scores in this game to win the game. And they said, because they asked him what his favorite goal was. And he's like, that goal. And he has legendary goals, goals that, like, every striker in the world will tell you that's the top three goals of all time. His favorite, though, is when he came back and won this not really important game against this worst side. Mm. And he says, it was because I wasn't that guy anymore. I was a fan. And so he said he stayed in the locker room until 1:45 that morning, just sitting there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, because it's kind of second half of life stuff. Mm-hmm. He was like, I could appreciate it. Like, I wasn't out there just trying to kill and go. I was like, this is a gift. I get to do this. Like, I want to be in the moment. And I thought, what an articulate thing that he was like. He said that literally the janitor came and was like, hey, man, like, we got to go to bed. And he said he finally got up, but he said, I just wanted to sit there and enjoy it. And I was like, that's such an interesting shift to your point, kind of like between that and what you said, like, I'm not like that anymore. But when he said that, I was like, isn't it interesting that even in his career, he had a moment where it was like, okay, I just don't want to be like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to enjoy it. And to your point, like, sit and talk with the guys and be like, God, we're doing this together. And I think that is something that always sort of grieves me with that mentality is I do think you may win and you may have a lot of success, but I just don't know how much you enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I sometimes wonder, I did not have the killer gene like Sean. Sean is just like a stone cold killer, and it's awesome, and it still kind of shows itself sometimes, which is terrifying.
You see it flip. You're like, oh, yeah. Like it just slits.
But I just finished this book called Be Your Future Self Now, which is all about almost having that perspective of if I was 80 years old, looking back on today, what would my approach be? It almost brought me to tears thinking about, we have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and you know, you get caught up in, they just broke a glass, or our little boy swats everything off the table, and it's like, what would my 80-year-old self respond to this? Like, and it's not with this intense anger. Like, you for sure need to discipline and make boundaries, but it's more of that gratitude of like, hey, we'll never get this day back.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's maybe what Henri was experiencing a little bit of like, I'll never get this back, you know?
Yeah. So it's going to go away at some point.
Yeah.
Whatever that thing is. And if you can't, and I would imagine being as young as you were, because gymnastics, such a young sport, is that impossible? Because you know, when you're 14,
it's
like
hard.
How much self-awareness can you really have? You know?
Not really any. But I agree with everything you were saying about his story. I felt nothing at the Olympics.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Nothing. I didn't even register that I was at the Olympics. I was I was so capable and like good at shutting the world out.
Wow.
And just doing my job. And then the second time around, I tried to make a comeback in 2012. Ended up going to the Olympics to work instead of compete because I retired, and that's where I met his older brother, who set us up on a blind date.
Oh, I love that.
But it was the second time around, similar to what he was saying, my best days were over.
Wow.
And there was this point in time where I was like, I either have to go back to this place where I sacrifice everything that I am and like sacrifice my body, my mind. And I was just like, I'm done. Wow. I don't want
to
do it.
How old were you then when you had 19. That revelation? That's at 19 to have that revelation.
I knew what it was going to take. And at 16, I had such an undying passion that to me, I would have given anything.
Wow.
At 19, I didn't care as much anymore. And it probably took 5 years afterwards to become human again.
To come down.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I mean, even 5 years into dating, it took a very long time to just become, to be able to like process emotion and be a normal human being.
I mean, could you feel that when you were dating?
Yeah. And yeah, for sure. I would say it maybe even took longer.
Thanks.
Well, no.
We're still working on it.
I went through it too.
We all.
The thing about athletics is the longer you do them, the harder it is to transition out.
Wow.
Whenever that time comes.
Really, like,
you have to refurnish your entire life of habits and your nutrition plan, your friends, your, you know, your approach is not hey, what does my coach say my schedule is today?
Yeah.
And I'm waking up at 7. And then, you know, for football, we had our day planned out in 5-minute increments. Mm-hmm. And I knew what I was going to, I knew what my fall was going to look like to the, from August all the way through December. Mm. And then when I got cut the first time, it was like, okay, so no one's telling me what to do. I don't have to work out. It's just like a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did feel that with Sean, where she, your thing was, you're still training athletically like you were competing.
Because mm-hmm. I didn't know how to be normal.
Yeah. Mm. And then there was all this complexity.
I can't imagine this. The this really would be, to me, so hard, is the self-value that you've done something, both of you, that you've done something that gave you so much identity. You know, it's how people looked at you. It's how you got value from people and worth in a lot of ways.
And it's probably brought up in every conversation that you have.
Kind of like our brag sheet today. That was so short. But I mean, I can't imagine shedding that or trying to sort of get on the other side of something that has gotten you where you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's literally one of the biggest reasons you've gotten whatever you've gotten, be it the success, the notoriety, the money, whatever. You know, and then all of a sudden, that's what I think it's the most fascinating thing about professional athletes to me, is that you are something on Friday, and on Monday after you retire, you are not that anymore at all. It's not like, you know, and you're going, well, every now and then I'll go tumble. It's like, what? You know what I mean? Like, I'll just show up and let it shine and knock out some uneven parts. Or like, you know, you're just out in the field just chucking long. You know, like, it's just, it's kind of done, you know? Yeah. And so it's such a, athleticism is such a fascinating, especially professionally, it's so fascinating because it's just, there's no denouement. It's not like a nice little, you kind of transition out. It's like, you know, they high five you and then the next person comes in. You
it
know?
It makes it even harder because it's put on such a pedestal in our culture to get to that level. That once you reach that level where you're in the NFL or at the Olympics, the entire world is sharing that moment with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so in an instant, your entire identity to the world becomes that one moment.
Gosh.
And they could care less about anything else going on, because all we wanted to see with Michael Jordan was him make the shot win the game. And it's like, when people realize you're a human being afterwards, they don't care.
Yeah.
They're like, but remember when you did this? And it becomes really hard, personally, to find your own identity.
Oh, because you're like, imagine.
My parents, my family, they live in this moment because they're so proud.
Right.
And it's hard to like rewrite your script and be like, but what else am I that's going to make the world so proud?
Yeah.
And you have to learn.
And with both, I mean, with NFL, but especially gymnastics, probably more so than any other sport, maybe, at 19... you're done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are no, like, you know, 29-year-old gymnasts at the Olympics.
Man, maybe. I would love to see that. There's, so much.
There is one. She's an anomaly.
Really?
Oh, wow.
She's in her 40s.
No.
The German. She's German.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really? Made of some I don't know how. Things.
She's a fanatic.
Cyborg.
She's a... Okay, rabbit hole. She competes for Czechoslovakia, I think.
I don't know.
But she has a son who went through leukemia. And so she continues doing gymnastics because it pays all of his medical bills.
Oh, my gosh.
And she wins every time.
Holy cow.
Every time. Yeah, it's wild.
What a story.
She's been in 6 Olympics.
Good night.
No way.
As a gymnast. She does vault. That's it.
Well, that's like the... I mean, of course.
I was going to say, before you said it, I was like, I bet she does vault.
I bet it's vault.
You know the thing I was going to say? I think the thing that's so interesting, exactly what you said, Sean, it's like, I think it's humans... We so badly want the divine. We want to experience the divine, right? And so what happens when you get out there and do what you do, it's so close to it. Because we watch it and we go, like, that's unhumanly that somebody can do what she's doing, right? And so we get a little taste of something that's bigger than us. And so that's amazingly magnetic. What's not magnetic is realizing, oh, she's just like me. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's kind of uninteresting because I know me and I'm not interested in me. I want Michael Jordan. I want LeBron. I want these uber athletes who can get me out of me and get me close to what I want God to make me feel like, but I don't know it's God that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. I just know that moment made me feel like this divine thing. And so I can't imagine when you come back down and you're like, hey, I'm like you. People are like, okay, so that's great. That's not really what we're looking for. Could you do something that makes me feel like that again? And you're like, I can't. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, it's kind of ironic because it should be more empowering to say, oh, wow, that person is like me and I can do something cool like that, as opposed to trying to impose that or just freeze that moment.
Well, I think it's helpful. Like what you're describing, Dave, is magnetic and attractive for sure. But it's not helpful.
No, it's not
helpful to my life.
Yeah.
You know, but the vulnerability that Dave was talking about that you guys do so well at displaying through your channels, that's actually helpful, I think, to people's lives.
Well, and that's honestly why we started doing what we're doing is I got so tired at the elite level seeing NBC do these like background fluff pieces, but they would paint every picture as so extreme. Like only this person.
Yeah.
No matter how they shot it, they would spin it in a way that she's unlike anyone. And it was like, but I'm not. I'm eating macaroni and cheese with hot dogs.
But it's not just macaroni.
And I'm going, exactly. And I'm going to public school.
We've and never seen it.
We got to this point where we're like, let's just show that we're humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing different.
Yeah. Well, you know what it does? It's so beautiful. This is what happens, is when you are vulnerable, especially as someone who is respected and it, you know, your words are true, elite athlete, it creates this vacuum, right? So all of a sudden when you go, no, I'm not up here, I'm way down here, there's this vacuum. And God, that is the God-sized hole. And so what people have to suddenly do is go, well, what goes in there? And you're like, well, it's funny. Here's the Roman road. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. Here's a track. But that's what's beautiful about it is when we make ourselves lower, especially people that people think are perfect, they go, well, if you're not, how do we reconcile this? Well, I'm small because I am fallen, I'm simple, whatever. But then, you know, what does actually make you feel like you want me to make you feel? It's God, you know? And so it's this beautiful way to, you know.
That's way more true than that feeling of divinity. Yeah. Like that route, but it's also way less fun for people.
Mm-hmm. So much less fun. Okay. So much less fun.
But there's so many dynamics at play. I was just thinking about your new album, Dave. Congrats, by the way. Thank you. But it's like there's as an athlete transitioning out, and maybe as musicians, you guys feel this, like two simultaneous dynamics where you're having to reinvent yourself, but then there's also this inertia where other people are having to reinvent their or like reshape their perspective of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one moves quicker than the other, so then there's always kind of like this disjointed, like, people still see Sean as a gymnast, and it causes a little friction. But it is like the personal transition out of that. We did a live podcast tour. This is my closest experience to having what you guys do professionally. And I'll never forget that. Honestly, it was kind of a terrifying feeling of euphoria of like you look at, you're on the stage and you look out and you're like,
are you not entertained?
but you're like, it's like a feeling of power. And I think it's probably a more intense feeling than what you experience as an athlete on a regular basis. Still similar, I think, but more focused. And it's really hard to keep that in check. So I think a lot of people have different answers to that. I think Johnny Cash and his Walk the Line movie where it's euphoria. Well, if I'm not on stage, I'm going to get drugs, right? Or that's a tale as old as time. But athletes, it's, I don't know. Usually ends up in depression, I feel like.
Yeah. The same exact context. We're going down rabbit hole again. But I did this interview with I Am Second a few years after I retired. And people were like split. It was a controversial interview because I basically said I stood on top of a podium and won an Olympic gold medal at what people would say the highest peak of my career. Mm. And I literally had the thought on the podium, like, is this it?
Yeah.
Is this what I've worked for my whole life?
Mm-hmm.
That people teach you will fulfill your whole being. And I was like, wow. I'm in trouble. Because it's like, now what? And it's if you just keep chasing the next thing, you'll never find it.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Isn't it funny too that Solomon sort of shot called that, you know, however many years ago. He's like, hey, trust me, all of you who think you've got a bunch of stuff, I've got more. If you think you've tried everything, I've tried more. And it's not what you want it to be. Yeah. We're like, yeah, but Now, in 2023, it's a little different, Solomon. So yeah. I think I've got a handle on this thing, you know.
Do you feel like that was, because this happened at, you were on that podium at 16?
Mm-hmm.
16 years old. I mean, as cruel as that moment maybe must have been for you, I would imagine it would be kind of a gift for the rest of your...
It was amazing.
Going forward to really? Be like, okay, there's no more extreme example of like a singular focused goal and then getting it. And there's no like, it's objective. It's like, no, you won. It's here's your gold medal. You've done it. Mm-hmm. It's done. In sport, there is no, this is the highest achievement you can have. And then to feel what you felt in real time on the podium. Have you talked to any other athletes, like gold medalists, who have felt that exact same thing? Is it a pretty common feeling, you think?
I haven't had that specific conversation with anyone, but I think you see trends of extreme level athletes going into depression, having this hard life afterwards of like, what now?
Yeah.
And I think the coolest thing that I learned at that time that I got to take with me forever was I stood as high as the world could see.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like praised. And then I stood on the second place podium and think I gave a better performance than the actual gold medal one.
Mm.
But the world was like, how does it feel to lose?
Mm.
Right.
And it gave me this perspective of like, it actually doesn't matter what anybody's opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you objectively speaking at those Olympic Games, my silver medal performance was better than the gold.
Mm.
But the world's like opinions of it were so off.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was just like, I don't really care anymore.
God, that's a great word.
I'm going to just try to do my best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your objective opinion doesn't matter.
Okay, John, let's try it one more time for me, okay?
Okay.
Can you name one of Oprah's favorite things in 2018? Think of this.
Oh, 2018. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't do very well at this last time, but I'm gonna get it now. Okay, I'm guessing one of Oprah's favorite things in 2018 was the White Album by the Beatles. It feels right to say I know I'm right.
Okay, see, I think that album was released like just barely before 2018. So let's just go one more time. Give it.
Was
one
it
more
2015?
Time.
It was probably 2015. Teddy Ruxpin. I'm going Teddy Ruxpin.
That one's not even. You're way off. You're way.
Wait. I know it. The Shake Weight.
Okay, I don't understand how you can be this bad at this. I'm just going to tell you, okay?
Okay.
One of Oprah's favorite things from 2018 is Cozy Earth's bedding bamboo sheet set.
Sheet set. That was literally my next guess.
Now you're just cheating.
Right after the Shake Weight.
There's so many things after the Shake Weight, just in general. Cozy Earth's best-selling bamboo sheet set is temperature regulating and incredibly soft. So soft. Reinvent your sanctuary with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding collection. From pillows to sheets and blankets, indulge in the ultimate luxury.
Sleep with confidence thanks to Cozy Earth's generous warranty. Luxury bedding essentials that provide peace of mind and endless comfort.
Make every night a five-star experience with Cozy Earth's responsibly sourced, temperature-regulating bamboo viscose bedding.
Now listen, CozyEarth.com is where dreams come true, Dave. Your destination for the softest, most luxurious sheets, from cashmere blends to timeless textures. They've got it all.
Cozy Earth provided an exclusive offer for our listeners today, because if you're asking, guys, how much does Cozy Earth love Dadville? Listen to what I'm about to say.
Let us show you.
Yep. Visit CozyEarth.com and get up to 35% off site-wide when you use the code Dadville.
Insane. That's CozyEarth.com and get up to 35% off site-wide when you use the code Dadville.
Ten seconds on the clock, John.
Okay.
How many things can you name that are always growing?
Oh my gosh, I'm nervous. Grass. Except for my yard. Toenails. ears, apparently, which is weird.
John, focus.
Okay. Urban sprawl.
How about businesses on Shopify, John?
I feel like that's the best answer, actually, because Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
From the launch your own online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit 1 million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow.
I remember that day.
Yeah.
When I hit it by the north. Oh, so long ago. Hey, whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, you like that alliteration there?
I do that.
Shopify
really
helps
that.
You sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system. Wherever, whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. I can play that game too, John. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms.
And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
What I love about Shopify, and you're going to ask, is that you can grow your average order value with the Shopify Bundles app, where you can create and sell product bundles with ease.
Everybody loves bundles.
I love that. Yeah.
Shopify powers 10%, listen to this, Dave.
Okay.
10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Bobby Brown told us every little step, and Shopify is leaning into
that's okay? That's what he was talking
because
about the whole time.
Businesses that grow, grow with Shopify.
So sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/dadville, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dadville now to grow your business. No matter what the stage you're in, shopify.com/dadville.
There's a documentary about this called The Weight of Gold. I think it's Michael Phelps and
Jeremy Bloom,
and several gold medal Olympians have committed suicide because of this gap, right?
Wow. Really?
But if you take the flip side of that and you're able to work through that, I feel so extremely spoiled to be Sean's husband in many different ways, but one of which is like, dude, she turned professional at 12. Mm. She had all these peak moments, quote unquote, of life, like the best things. And she has been able to use that and grow wisdom from it. And so like her whole perspective, I'm so thankful that she often keeps me in check of like, you know, where I'm tempted to make decisions on money or like, hey, maybe this will get our name out, you know, whenever that situation is. She's like, no, been there, done that.
That is,
you know,
amazing.
I've been on David. She's been on all the shows, and she just has this wisdom that has really positively impacted our marriage and our family. And kudos to you, babe, for that.
That's a great word. Great. I mean, that really is amazing to think about. Like the amount of, do you feel that? Like when you think about what you've learned in life, can you feel the weight of like, I kind of know something.
I kind of know something. I feel that. I feel like that I've seen some things. I was very fortunate, unfortunate, I don't know how you want to look at that, to be so young and be thrown into a world where people are going through some of the heaviest things in life. And I love to observe. I'm usually shy by nature. So for 10 years of being in the spotlight, I just got to sit back and watch people break or people succeed and people, what they valued and make horrible mistakes, like all of these things, and myself included.
Yeah.
And got to learn a lot that I now get to share with my kids. And
that is invaluable. I mean, I feel like at 45, I'm in a season of this right now in my career where I'm like, hearing you say that, I need to hear that. Like that second place and you did your best. But like even now, I can feel, I'm still not believing what the truth is. I'm like, if I can just get a couple things to click, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Even at 45. And I'm like, it is so hard to shake that, but I think it does take what you've seen to really learn it. Like you have to have those moments where you get a little taste of the glory, as Nacho Libre would say. But you know, to really then go, this really isn't giving me what I want it to give me. Mm-hmm. And I think what value it is that you had that so young. Again, what an invaluable thing to have a spouse that can really look at you in the eyes and go like, hey, look at me.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's not going to work. Like, let me show you some scars and some things. It's like it doesn't do what you want to do. So
you guys have two kids, two and four. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how would you feel if these two kids, all of a sudden, they just did like the perfect round off? Is that a thing? Is that what you call it?
That's a thing. Round off? There you go. Good job.
Perfect long snap. And you're like,
at four.
Oh, they're destined to go the exact same paths that we went. How would you feel knowing that?
This is going to sound harsh. I don't really care. Mm. I am so excited to see what our kids choose.
Mm-hmm.
And I could care less whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think Andrew and I share this thought of like, we just are excited and hopeful that they choose something that we give them the opportunity to find something that they have passion for. I will be honest and say I'm terrified if our daughter chooses gymnastics. Not because I dislike it. Mm-hmm. I would do it again in a heartbeat. And not because I think it's going to be too hard or sacrificial or whatever, but because I don't think anybody will give her the fair chance to be bad or to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will always have this expectation of her to be a little bit better because of me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair on a kid.
And Andrew. I mean, we know what he can do on the,
on the long
side. On the long
side. On the balance beam, honestly.
But it's the same with you. Like, people will say, oh, your dad is in the NFL.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Yeah. You should be just as good.
To John's question, I mean, it's one of our favorite questions to ask on Dadville when we have athletes on. And it fascinates me as much as anything does. What would be y'all's hopes? Let's say that either one of them, new and included, soon to be included, show any kind of promise in a sport. Like you, and you know, let's say at 7, 8, 9, you can see like, oh, you know, obviously this one's got the juju. You know, it's like, what would be seeing what y'all have seen, especially like y'all have done it right at the highest levels. What would be your hope for them? You know, like how do you think about that? It's funny too with your dad too, because that's such a that's another interesting thing, is because you had a dad that was so athletic and pushed y'all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been working on this project. I call it the family playbook, where I just lost my dad. What was it, 9 months ago? So it's like, you know, you just have a different perspective, and then you start thinking about things. I've gotten into family trees recently, but this family playbook is like, I just want to have an archive or a history of. What does it mean to be an East? And that includes family recipes, health conditions.
Wow.
And I've had this thought of my family, our family didn't start the day we stood at the altar and got married. It didn't start the day we had our first kid. Mm. It's been going on for generations, our family. And there are patterns. One of the things in this is previous occupations that have been held in our family. And it's like there's patterns that develop, right? Like we, I think, like to think that we're individuals and like we're brand new variations, but as Solomon said, to shout out, you know, him another time, there's nothing new under the sun. And I think that kind of applies to the family realm too, in relation to them, to our kids potentially being good at sports. I would be elated if they found something they loved. I think it's more of a responsibility on the parents' standpoint. I think youth sports nowadays get skewed, and there's like a lot of, especially in gymnastics, I've never seen anything like this. Families will uproot, you know, their four kids and move them across the country so that this one child can get coached by this Olympic quality coach and hopefully get a college scholarship. And then it like, that ruins the other kids. It ruins the parent. All the priorities are wrong. And I feel like I'm really grateful for my dad. I hope our kids find a thing that they're able to, when they do it, feel the presence of God, you know, that chariot's a fire quote.
God, that's great. Yeah.
And my dad, when I was doing sports, I felt like God's presence was there. I felt my dad's presence was there. And it was, our conversations in the car after were not about strategy or tactical things or what I could have done better. It was like this joy, you know, and whether it is sports, or not, it's our responsibility to preserve that feeling of gratitude. That's how I feel.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. What a great way to put that.
I feel the same way with music and piano specifically. Like we've got a piano in the house. My girls are 8 and 10, and we got a piano in the house just to have a piano around so that they could kind of hear me playing it. They could walk up and mess around on it, but we haven't signed them up for lessons yet.
Can you imagine just waking up and
no, you don't understand. Listen, I talk about this all the time. He's it so is good. One of the joys of my life when John will sit in our front room and play piano. I'm like, oh my god, he's doing shit.
Oh my god.
Okay, guys, back to my. I'm sorry. I've got a really good point here. But by the time I was Luca's age, our oldest, I had been in lessons for 6 years. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a part of me that's like, am I dropping the ball on this? Am I not? But it's all to the end of what you just described. Like, I just want them, like, if I didn't have piano and music, that was like this like magic thing that I had where I could sit and feel the presence of God. I just felt connected to it. I remember one time Amy and I, this years ago, back in Broad Ripple, Indianapolis, we came home from church and we were talking about the sermon was really good. It was really heavy. And Amy was like, this just makes me want to, I forget what she said. Maybe she wants to like put some worship music on or something. She was like, what do you feel right now? And I was like, I feel like I want to go like work, like sit at the piano. And she got a little mad at that. She's like, are you missing? You want to go work? And I was like, that's like where I feel most connected, you know? Mm. Anyway, so all that to say, that's like my hope for my girls and my reason for not having them get formal with it and have a teacher, because I just don't want them to hate it. I want them to just love it. I want them to hold on to the joy of it, you know?
Mm. That's good.
I think similar to what you were saying, it's like I could care less what it is, but I want them to have that outlet.
Yeah.
That they're so excited about, that they're on their own motivated to go to, and they want to learn more and get a little bit better. Mm. I just want them to find that.
That to me, it's why, I mean, but that's not why.
You came in so strong.
You know what I was about to say too. That's why I wasn't an athlete. I mean, I played growing up, but nothing in that world. But I just don't, that space is so terrifying to me. There's nothing like with my kids when it comes to that space, it scares me more than like how to achieve and do well at something without it turning into how I view them or the world views them or undue expectation. That little line to me, it's like, it's all Holy Spirit dust. I'm like, I don't know how to, and I don't know that any of ours will have that kind of gifting, but you know, it's just, it's, whoa, you know, you get right up to it and you're like, oh, am I pushing too much? Am I, you know, but they're really good, or I want to, you know, it's like, it's just a really, you know.
It is a fine line because I don't view our parenting style as like really soft and like, and oh, just follow your heart. Yeah. It is important to, we were actually talking to, I think Allo Black was the one who verbalized this really well. He was like, look, when you teach your kids one thing, in the depth of one thing, you teach them so many different things. So like whether it's farming or music, like there is a responsibility to have your kid learn something and have the discipline applied to it, because whether they end up doing music or sports or whatever, it can apply to so many different things. But knowing when discipline turns into like obligation or like, that's a really fine line. And I think it's important to have community around you to like have a strong marriage that you can have a little push and like give and take of, are we overdoing it? Just got to be thoughtful.
Well, it's just I think that's what's tricky about American Christianity. Here we go. And I'm not going to, this is not like a launching point. Let me tell you one of the tricky things I just think is we really, as the church, we don't do a good job of understanding what talent is, or like we misuse that illustration. Like, God, you're misusing talents God's given you. And I'm like, I feel so strong, but I just don't think Jesus would ever sit down with us and be like, Andrew, do you know the talent I gave you to be a football player? And you could have played 50 years if you like, or he looks at me and goes like, Dave, the music, if you really wanted to, you doubled down. I'm just like, that's just not at all biblical. But we in America, because we're so driven and we're so like accomplishment oriented, we tend to lump Christianity in with it's just kind of prosperity gospel flipped. It's like, if you're good at something, that's because God gave you that, and then you owe him because he needs you somehow to be good at that for him to be validated or something. And so I think that's where that gets tricky to me, is that space of like, how can we as believers especially be really good at something, like really do use the gifts God has given us all of a sudden it's Greek. I'm like, but you know, it's like, how can we do that the best we can? Like really, really do it well. Like spend energy on it and have discipline. at the same time realizing we're not doing it. You said that, so it's a chariot's fire. We're not doing it because God is going to be disappointed if we fail at it or we don't use it, but because this is how God, this is how we commune with God. Like, we feel the presence, you know, the joy of God.
It's a worship. It's a worship.
Mm-hmm. And so I think, but God, that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's like so hard to navigate it. And I think about kids especially, like, how do you teach them to work hard at something and like be diligent, like really lean into it, slash it, if it doesn't work, it's okay. Like, it's not the end of you because you didn't, you failed, or, you know, like that mm-hmm. is, and I think especially in this country, in church Christianity, that just gets really weird because, you know, it's like, it's to me, it's back to the very first thing, you know, we talked a little while ago, but it's that idea that like you have a gift and that makes you this higher thing. And really what I'm asking for is not for you to be a good Christian. It's for me to make you, for you to make me feel this way again. Mm-hmm. And that's just a tricky space. So, you know, we talk to especially athletes by kids. I'm always just curious, like, how do you, especially seeing what y'all have seen, how do you not, you know, over push or sort of like, I know the potential because I've seen it, you know?
We were talking about this the other day. One of the greatest gifts my coach ever gave me, and he is amazing, he's still like a second dad to me, is every single day, whether it was in the gym or on the Olympic stage,
wow,
he could have cared less if I fell or made mistakes. Hmm. The only thing, and he could have cared less if I won a gold medal. The only thing he ever celebrated was effort.
Wow. Hmm.
And he could tell, like, he knew me so well. He would always ask the question, like, how do you feel you did today? And,
wow.
And it was always this answer, honest answer of like, it wasn't my best. I could have given a little more. I could have tried a little harder. But if I answered, I gave my all today and I fell 100 times, he would be prouder than anybody in the stadium.
Amazing?
And that unlocked in me in gymnastics this undying passion to just want to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't afraid to fall.
Wow.
But the fears of falling and making mistakes and failure came from outside voices, never from him.
Isn't that amazing?
It was the greatest gift he ever
gave.
And
this was your coach from like day one, mm-hmm. right?
From
back in Iowa?
Yeah. From the time I was 5. Yeah. I had a coach from 3 to 5. We moved gyms because my coach opened
it. Sorry, those ages are so crazy.
I know.
Like, it literally was white noise. It was like,
well, yeah. Right. Sorry,
I'm just imagining 5-year-old Sean talking to her new coach and being like, look, I've been doing this for 2 years.
Well, let's be real. My parents moved me to a different gym because it saved gas money. It was like the newest gym in the school.
I love
like,
that so much.
Yeah. But it just happened to be the guy who I went to the Olympics with.
That's amazing.
That is remarkable. I mean, I as a dad, I can't hear anything more than maybe that idea that like failure is just about the effort. Like,
yeah.
It's so hard as a parent to not sort of look at the end product and go and judge it by that. You know, it's so hard because it's like, and I love that. I do feel like that is a great thing that I hear so much in the parenting space is that, which mm-hmm. I'm so thankful for. Like, you can feel that all the therapists and psychologists and coaches are realizing like, oh yeah, we need, I mean, that's Covenant School where my kids are. That is one of the bedrocks. It's like, failure is not a bad thing. It's just mm-hmm. about, you know, we want to give them a space to fail. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, would you please tell me every time I come here, because I can get mm-hmm. like squanky on like, mm-hmm. you
but
know.
It's not the participation trophy mentality.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's like, it's more saying, hey, feedback is good and honest feedback is good. And if you finish third and you gave your best, then great.
Yeah.
But maybe you finish first in something else, like a whole different sport, and mm-hmm. look into that more. You know,
it's like
that honest feedback is important because it can help steer and direct.
Right.
I feel like you should always be on the verge of your talents, like on the on the boundary line of what you're capable of.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's where failure comes in of like, oh, I can't do a double twisting, double backflip or whatever it is. I failed.
I'm really impressed you just pulled that out.
That was
is that
amazing.
Right? Is that right?
That is right.
That's probably but as hard like, to do as say.
Yeah. Try it.
No.
But it's like, you know, you have to fail in order to get that. It's like mm-hmm. the Roger Bannister. You have to be on the cusp of what you're capable of. And that's where failure is appropriate because you're pushing.
Yeah.
You're pushing past like what.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's good.
One of my favorite moments with my son, speaking of honesty, like, I, you know, my wife has kind of got, she's not anywhere as accomplished as y'all are, but she's much more the killer gene. Like, she was an athlete growing up, like, played every sport, did the whole thing. So with our kids, it's hysterical because it's very flip. Like, I'm usually the more comforting, like, how'd you feel like it went today? But, and, you know, I want them to do well and I'm competitive, but she's like, she'll make them do drills in the front yard. Like, that's her vibe. You know what I mean? She's like, if you're going to do the sport, we're going to do the sport. And I'm like, hey, your fangs on my teeth. And, but it's great. And it's a great yin yang in our marriage. But so our son in play basketball in their team, it was like the cutest thing because it's all these boys who are really good at soccer. This is like 2 or 3 years ago. They were terrible at basketball. So they went out and it's all on he and his buds, and so they just got absolutely, I mean, it was shellacked. It was, I mean, like the parent, you know, we're all kind of like, I mean, it was bad. He gets in the car and I'm doing that. I'm thinking about Dadville episodes. I'm like, okay, like, we've got good counsel here. And so I'm like, I kind of adjust the mirror. And I'm like, looking back there. And he is just like, I mean, seething. I'm like, okay, don't, you know, just ask how it went. That's what they take it. So how do you feel like you did? And he was like, awful. And I was like, and I literally feel like everything that we have learned has come to this moment. It is all here. And I was like, okay, I'm going to drive. And I was like, well, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't that bad. He leaned up and he goes, it's like 8-year-old. Why would you say that? He said, he goes, Dad, you saw that. He goes, that's the worst I've ever played. Our team is terrible. I never want to play this sport again. He's like, he goes, don't lie to me. And I literally was like, okay, that was really bad. That's like maybe the worst basketball game I've ever seen. And he was like, thank you. And it was like, isn't it funny that he needed to just be validated and like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen.
That's so good that he's able to say that, though.
Yeah.
He was miserable. But of course, me, I'm like, well, no, I mean, you got some running in and you got a little nice sweat worked up.
You were running with the team the whole time, buddy. Kept your jersey on.
They were dunking on you. You did a great job.
You probably paid better for the other team and how bad you were to help them win.
What's so cool, though, is even at 8, though, he was able to sit there and be like, that was horrible. I was horrible. And that's where my coach would always come in. And if I ever took it a little further and I'd be like, I would never want to do this sport again, he'd be like, but why? Is it because you did bad and you like don't want to feel that again? Or is it because you don't love it?
Wow.
And so he would always do this check with me.
That's a great question.
And if I still loved it, he'd be like, great, we can work on it.
Yeah.
To where you don't have to feel that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was always like, are you just wanting to quit because you were horrible today?
Yeah.
Should we move on to the second question, John?
Yeah. So question number 2. This is actually 1A.
Okay.
It actually reminded me of this when you were talking about that car ride with Ben. In that moment, and you were like, okay, it all leads to this moment. Do you guys have those kinds of moments with your kids where you're like, I have them less now. I'm 10 years into being a dad, and I feel like I used to worry so much about like, okay, this is the moment, and like whatever I say to them in this moment, because you never know what your kids are going to remember. Like I have some random memories of things my dad said to me when I was like 7, and I'm like, why do I remember that one? Mm-hmm. So I'm always thinking, is this the thing they're going to remember? Is this going to shape their whole trajectory? I actually feel that less now, but it used to be something that I really worried about a lot.
Mm.
What is that for you guys? What would you say that you worry about as a parent the most?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's kind of relieving to think that therapy seems to be prescribed to everybody, you know, so it's like, you know, you should definitely be thoughtful and, but everyone's going to have issues we're not going to do it great in certain areas, I'm sure. What do I worry about most? Interesting. Oh, Sean has something.
I feel like it's different because we have a 4-year-old girl and a 2-year-old boy. So we're still early. But I already feel like you said earlier, that I'm somehow missing out and I'm behind on getting them whatever. I don't really have many worries yet with our 2-year-old because we're just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he is wide open, lives life on the edge. Yeah. I think being a mom to a little girl my biggest fear, worst worry that I keeps me up at night is that I won't instill a confidence in her to like go after things.
Yeah.
She's such an emotional little thing and she gets dejected very easily. And that to me, I'm like, I don't know how to, I don't know how to steer this.
Yeah.
Cause I want her to be like, I just want to be like, fight back.
Yeah.
You're four. Right.
Is it because you don't feel like you're like, that's not how my brain works.
No, that is how my brain works. It is.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
So we're like opposite a little bit. And I want to see a fire in her and I want to be able to foster that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I don't know how.
Cause that's more your native programming.
I think it also is just,
you just want to
sets
see.
Her up for success as a woman in our world.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that's my only worry. It's just a small one.
Yeah, just a little one. Just a little tiny one.
My current biggest worry, we have our boys too, and I'm like, we gotta just keep this guy alive. He's jumping off cliffs. He's trying to take his bike down the stairs. And my tendency naturally is probably to overreact or like get there, like try to prevent him, which is what... So I try to.
Wow.
Your
response to him saying that was amazing.
I do want to say, like, throughout our conversation so far, one of my favorite things has been the looks that you guys are giving each other. I wish people could see that.
Coming from the man who's like, I've just already accepted. We're going to the ER with broken bones.
I think it's important to. So my kind of MO as a dad then is do a little bit less. Try to do a little, like...
Yeah,
it's the
let him take the bike down the stairs.
Dangerous things carefully, but knowing what that line is hard. Yeah. So that's my biggest worry.
Andrew introduced our son. So like they've been watching sports together, football, baseball, basketball, all these things, going down like Red Bull YouTube videos.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our son gravitates towards bikes. That's all he wants in like BMX videos.
Oh wow! Oh, even now.
Oh my gosh, he wants nothing to do with football, baseball, nothing. He wants off-roading, terrifying, death-defying BMX videos. And now he has his little like Strider bike.
Oh gosh.
And you'll see him trying to like jump it from different rocks.
The thing without pedals?
Yeah.
He's just pushing it? Yeah.
We pretty much have a BMX course set up in our backyard that he'll rip down. It's like a little bit of a hill. And he
it's freaking
but sweet. That's what he gravitates towards right now. So he's... I didn't even tell you. I caught him. We have like this 4-foot wall, like retaining wall in the back. He was riding his bike on it, and I had an absolute heart attack.
You know that feeling when your hands start sweating and your chest tightens?
Yeah.
And you're like, something bad is going to happen. That happens like 10 times a day with this kid.
You don't want to like yell at them yet because just get to them.
Here's what's tricky. I heard on some interview months ago, about somebody, some child professional or whatever, let's just go with that term, was saying like how important it is for your kids to feel like they're doing something kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
But then it's like let's stick with the bikes down the stairs thing.
Yeah.
It's like there's two paths that you can see happening. You could see your son when he is accepting his Olympic gold medal for riding bikes or whatever. Yeah. Saying like, you know what? My parents, they always fostered a great environment for me. They let me, they could have stopped me, but they didn't. And that gave me the confidence to be like, you know, to really go for it. Or he could fall and break both his legs and both his arms. Uh-huh. And then other parents would be talking about you guys being
like, and he's like, you know why I couldn't ride bikes later is my parents let me and my hammer never healed right. And so now my left leg is 2 inches shorter than my right. Man. And so I can't do
And that's why I never had the confidence to pray.
John and I, like, we always reference to his point about that earlier question. We're always like, what's the therapy moment? Like, what's the thing that our kids are going to sit, you know, with a therapist and be like, you know, it was a car ride back and my dad said that I played a good game of basketball when I knew I hadn't and then I couldn't trust him anymore. You know, it's like, what is the moment that they're going to sit with a therapist?
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Okay, it's time for speed round. You guys have been so sweet to hang with us.
Thank you, guys.
We're going to alternate these. This is speed round.
Okay,
it's speed round.
Andrew.
I'm ready.
Okay.
And you have to go faster than we go.
Yeah.
Okay. We obviously don't do anything quickly on this podcast.
Okay. Both are answering, right? and we'll alternate questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
First question I'm asking. Who's changed more diapers?
Sean.
Me.
Oh, geez. That was fast.
Oh, there we go.
That's too fast. Where you caught us off guard.
Okay. Let's say we're at Dave's palatial estate right now. Let's say right outside.
Fire. Yep.
There's a ping pong table. And you guys go out there and you play some ping
Andrew.
Pong. Who wins?
Andrew.
Wow. You answered before the question.
Yeah. They play ping pong in the NFL locker rooms. That's like what they do.
It's one of my main hobbies. I'm not kidding.
He's really good.
I love ping pong.
You're really good.
Yeah.
Have you played like with a legit ping pong player before?
He yes. plays with a professional tennis player who like taught him.
Those guys. Like,
wait, who is this? Would I know who the tennis player is? It was Roger Federer, wasn't it?
And it was.
I did play ping pong with Roger Federer.
Don't.
No, did you get it off?
No, I'm kidding. Oh okay, no. I was about to come shake your hand to get some of that on my hand.
Yeah. Ryan Lippmann was his name.
Yeah.
I actually, I don't want to brag. Not that it matters. We did win. You know, what's his name? Joseph Newgarten, the IndyCar driver who lives here. He has a ping pong tournament.
No.
He was trained by like the guys from China.
He's
ping pong.
He's one of the best IndyCar drivers.
Legit ping pong.
And we won the tournament. So
you're like, whatever. Nice. That's just the life that I live.
Next question. It's just another day.
Okay,
in my life.
Funniest sports moment from each of you.
Personal or
yeah.
Wow.
Or it could be like this is sort of the when we have musicians on, one of our favorite questions is like, what's the worst? It could be funniest. It could be worst. Like, what's the biggest like train wreck moment on stage?
Oh, when you took that medicine before.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my mom's going to be so sad.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh,
that's pretty great.
Okay.
Moms, stop listening right now.
This is so bad.
We love you.
No. She's going to be sad because it was her. It was her fault, and she knows it.
She gave you like,
okay, then she needs to hear this. Go ahead.
I was, she knows, she's traumatized. I was trying to make my comeback for the 2012 Olympic Games. It was my first time on like the national stage, so it's my first time back to U.S. National Championships. And I had horrible shin splints, so I always took Motrin, which was like prescribed and everything. And my mom, before, like, the most wonderful mom in the world, she went and stocked up on all of, like, my travel stuff. She got me, like, the travel size shampoos, everything. She restocked my Motrin, all these things. And I had been taking large doses of this daily, and I would take it before competition. And it had been happening for a couple weeks. I just was not feeling myself. I was just, like... super tired and exhausted.
Oh my gosh. Speed round.
I went through the competition, and it wasn't until after the competition, which I did not do well at, I was looking at my Motrin, and it was PM version.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Yeah. Tough. You hate to see it.
She was...
So how'd you feel like you did? Well, I
heard it. Like the muscle relaxer commercial. Have you seen that? Oh, that's one of my all-time favorites. Oh my gosh.
Poor mom.
Oh, that's tragic.
This isn't that comedic, but my first NFL game, it was Washington versus Jacksonville. And...
Speed round.
My first play, I caused the fumble, and I almost got the fumble, and then I was trying to still fight for the ball, and then I was on the Jacksonville sideline, and there's a picture.
Do you have it?
No, but it looks like I'm about to fight the whole Jacksonville team. It's pretty dope, but
it's an amazing
I almost
picture.
Got in a fight, or I did get in a fight my first NFL play. So.
Oh, my God.
The very first NFL play.
First play of my first game.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty intense. Yeah.
Is your puppy okay?
She probably tried it. No, she's throwing up. She's having a great time. She probably ate that
baby. Oh,
there she goes.
There it is.
We're good. Okay.
This is what you see at the Barnes Palatial Estate.
Oh, baby.
She just threw up right over by the east wing.
She looks fine now.
Yeah.
Y'all are ridiculous.
Oh, baby. Nope.
Well,
nope,
she's still
this is round two.
I'm so glad.
Oh, funny.
All right. Funniest parenting moment.
Oh, gosh. Don't video her.
This will be helpful with the veterinarian. We can show this to the vet.
This is the live podcast.
Yeah, this is what you get when you come here. That's not even our dog, so that's what you said.
Oh, baby.
I think she got it out. I think round two came out.
Funniest parenting moment, it would either be... It was the playground with you, or
oh geez, yeah,
yeah. Just say that one.
All right, this is the highlight. So I'm at the park. It's like me with my kid daughter, and usually it's a bunch of moms. There's one other dad there. We start cutting it up.
We know that. Life.
I'm like, hey, yeah. You like football, right? You know, just dude stuff. We start talking about it, and
she was like two at the time.
Our kids were playing together. He had an adopted son, and he had an amputated arm. This little boy did. And Drew is in the stage where she was putting everything in her mouth. And the little boy was from India. and so she had a bunch of rocks and sticks in her mouth. And we look over between conversations, and I see Drew with this amputated little arm in her mouth. And, and I didn't know how to react. I was like, I'm so sorry. and then, but you don't want to make the little boy. Yeah, so it's a whole thing.
How funny would it have been if you didn't know that it was amputated and you're like, hand is in her
shoulder. Yeah.
Okay. Last question. If each of you wrote a book on being a mom/dad, what would the title be?
Do Less.
Do Less.
Bro, you were so ready for that.
That was great.
I've been thinking about this. Do Less.
Yours is Do More.
Probably. Oh probably.
Do just a little more than that.
Just a little more than that.
That's great. Guys, thank y'all. I just want to say again, thank y'all for what you do. We so appreciate everything y'all put into the world and how thoughtful it is, and you know, just how vulnerable and everything. It's really, really great.
Thanks for the really giggles. Great. That was good giggles.
Yeah. And congrats on baby 3.
Oh yeah.
I was kinda hoping that baby would come like right now.
Right now.
Well, we could have dog, our first. We could be a pretty
things are coming out.
I was like, "Is your dog okay?"
You didn't give us coffee though.
Well, John, touche.
Well, hey,
wait, he did.
He's right across the street.
Yeah, he doesn't.
No, no, no. Oh wait. Oh, you did. That's okay.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.